Greetings and welcome to Higher Ground Live. I'm your host, Pastor Mathis, bringing you greetings from atop Higher Ground's World Headquarters this Tuesday, the 19th day of December, 2006. And we're joining you today as we do every day at this time, fighting the revisionists, fighting disinformation, fighting the spin doctors. That's right, we're busy forming a band of rival elites to stand against those elites that are trying to take over this nation. We're busy forming a band of rival elites that will stand against those global elites that are trying to take over this planet. We do all of that by cultivating people. People like you. People like you who will cause the elites to retreat. That's what we do here on Higher Ground Live. That's what we do here at Higher Ground Bible College. And that's what we do here on this great Truth Radio Network as we broadcast around the world and across this great nation. We are busy empowering people like you with truth so that you can impact the lives of your neighbors, so that you can impact the lives of your friends, so that you can impact the lives of your families and coworkers. As always, we're standing firm on the front line of the war on people because we are a constant voice of reason. I'm blessed to be coming to you from atop Freedom Command Center where we are regularly maintaining and regaining liberty. Friends, it is a blessing to be here with you. It is the second night in our week-long series of our League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and we are here finally reporting to you that we have corrected all of the audio problems. You should be hearing Higher Ground Live and all the other great shows on Truth Radio in the same high-quality audio that you have been hearing them in for so long. I know there's been problems with it for the last several weeks or even a month or two, but I believe that we have conquered those problems, I'm happy to report, because we get a lot of great information. And speaking of great information, that only comes from great guests, and we have tonight with us our favorite Tuesday night member of our league, of extraordinary gentlemen, Jack Smith. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Pastor. Happy holiday season coming up here.
And a Merry Christmas to you, too.
Well, thank you.
I got to talk about something, because there's a particular case that we talked about recently, and we have one of our reporters in a courtroom in Fall River, Massachusetts, and I'm not going to go over the whole case. We talked about it at length on Friday. And I don't have any new updates, but I do want to apprise you of a situation. We had a guy in there who was standing on a constitutional methodology. The judge has to provide his certify his oath and wouldn't do so, and the man kept insisting on that. And the judge, long story very short, ordered some bailiffs to assault him. They threw in the air, slammed down on the table, broke the table, and they dragged him off in handcuffs. And ultimately committed him for 21 days of observation to a mental institution. And anyway, I can't tell you exactly where that is at this particular moment, but the reality is that that is a technique that they employed, and a lot of people find it completely outrageous. So I was curious what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I don't think it's outrageous at all. We've heard for years and years that that's what Soviet Russians were doing to all of our so-called patriots when they'd come into the court and try to do something. And, of course, the Soviet Union just imitates everything we've done. After all, we were the ones that exported their government to them in the 19-teens, and they adopted all of the great concepts and principles of America, which was going socialistic and communistic in their economy, and so they just adopted everything we've done. When the judge basically is holding them, probably for a mental exam, what he's really telling you colorably is you're not competently defending yourself in the form and style that this courtroom is requiring you to use. And because you appear incompetent, but you're moving ahead as though you believe you know what you're doing anyway, I've got to tell you, because I'm the watchman on the wall, that you're going to run into a problem. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you out for a competency hearing to see if you can regain your understanding of what the competent procedures are in this forum, and if you'll come back then and participate or not. So that's what the judge is telling him. Now, he's not saying that you're mentally wacky like most people on the street would believe the judge would try to be accusing him of. Because after all, understand this, the judge is not a psychiatrist or any kind of a party that can adjudicate mental incompetency, at least the way we ordinarily construe it to be. He would have to literally send him out for a forensic examination by competent medical doctors. But what he's basically saying in the courtroom is, I cannot tolerate your procedure because you're incompetent as far as obtaining a remedy in my courtroom if you continue in that fashion.
You are more kind to them than I would be. I see it as a little different light. I think I see it as a tyrannical approach to bring a slave back in submission, and we'll do whatever we can. Where are your papers?
Well, you know, the real aspect, one has to look at the government as being your parents. And whatever you would do as a responsible child to your parent is what you ought to be doing in that courtroom. I know that's very, very difficult for most patriots to comprehend or to get to wrap around their ego and understand that the best procedure in there is to go in there in a humble nature like a child who's before a parent trying to explain a circumstance so that the parent can handle the situation. And if you have been the innocent party, the parent can excuse you and you can go home, because that's your ultimate goal in those procedures. Let me talk about a guy here that has come to me. He actually called me earlier today. I hadn't heard from this guy in a while. Back quite a while, and when a guy called me up, he mentioned his name, and I'm saying to myself, boy, that sounds familiar. Where have I heard that name? Then he talked about the fact that he spent the last 10 months in a mental institution, and he just has been released, and he is sitting in his home now with a leg monitor on under house arrest as this particular court or tribunal decides what they're going to do with him. And so I was very interested to find out what this guy's doing, because in the past, the guy has learned a lot of material, but he has not got a large depth or a large time of understanding this, and he tries to jump into the court, and he tries to tell these people what he's doing and why they got to let him go, and then he gets really shocked and surprised when they don't do that. Now, this guy was being prosecuted in a tax case, and he had learned about the so-called redemption process and learned about bills of exchange, and so he tendered a bill of exchange in return for his tax liability. And he made no uncertain terms in all of his writings and paperwork in an open court telling the judge and the prosecutor that he's done everything he needs to do and they ought to drop the case and let him go home. Well, the judge could not hear this from him because he was speaking with too much black and white truth and reality, and their court is not a court of reality or a court of truth. As Scripture says, to the when the Messiah was talking to the scribes and Pharisees, who were the legal attorneys and legal beagles of the day, the truth is not in you, and you're of your father the liar. Well, he was being maybe a little bit harsh on the one side, understanding that these people were in a colorable legal system back then, and that they weren't about truth, they were about form and concealing the truth from the people, which the Messiah again said, from the outside, the people think you are wonderful people, you're all whitewashed, you look really good on the outside, but inside, you're not that pristine clean, you're all about the commercial process, you're about whatever's going on, and you're liars, because you can't tell the truth in your procedure. So here we have this guy trying to tell the truth. And he told me this morning, he said he was kind of shocked when in open court the prosecutor said to the judge, Your Honor, we cannot let this man do this or get away with this, or else everybody will be coming in here doing the same thing. Well, what they ended up doing is they ended up deciding that he was incompetent and we had to put him out for a mental evaluation. So they sent him out for a minimum 90-day evaluation. They sent him to a foreign state into a mental institution and they kept him for 6 months. Then they sent him back to the proceedings, and I'm not exactly sure what the forensic I don't believe we can proceed, Your Honor, because he's incompetent. And our only alternatives are either A, to dismiss this case, or B, to have him interned in the mental hospital and keep him under drugs. And I really don't want to send him back to the hospital to have him placed under drugs indefinitely. Now, the court couldn't or didn't make a decision, and so this guy is sitting in his home in house arrest until the court makes the final decision as to what they're going to do.
So, Jack, they're locking him up in his home because they're considering either keeping him drugged up in an institution forever or dropping the case. Let's see, which way will they go?
Well, the nature of what I'm talking about tonight, we'll get more involved in what this guy's doing, is that we see patriots trying to go into their court and trying to resolve matters in one of two ways. Either they try to resolve it in terms of form, or they try to resolve it in terms of substance. And I put it to you that the people that are doing that directly into those courts are creating problems and not getting a remedy for themselves before the court. And that's the nature of what we've seen in this guy I'm talking about, and what we've seen in the nature of the example that you gave me here at the start of the program, where there's a guy that went into court, and presumably what he was trying to do is argue he had unalienable rights. The court shouldn't screw those up.
No, he was actually doing it a little bit differently. He was standing on the Constitution.
Well, unalienable rights. There's your, hey, got unalienable rights. They're based on the Constitution.
Yeah, it was a little bit more like, according to the Constitution, you have to take an oath, and I'd like to see that oath.
I understand, but you see, that does not apply in that court.
Right, but for them to say that...
He's trying to force them to change their court.
But for them to say that is for them to say, admit publicly, that the emperor has no clothes. They're not going to do that.
They cannot do and will not do. They'll send him to a mental institution before they'll do that.
Well, I can't argue with you since we've got a couple cases here that prove that. However, we also have an awful lot of wins. There are hundreds of wins where cases have been thrown out because of that.
I hear you, but the wins were not a resolution of the problem.
Some of them were.
Let's get rid of this guy. We got other sheep to shear. Okay? So my point is not that what that tactic is doing is not to a certain extent effective. The guy's sticking up for unalienable rights. But his problem in the big scheme of things is if they want to be adamant with push to shove and they don't believe it's in their best interest to just shoo this guy out the door and bring the next victim in, it's going to be woe unto the person that tries that procedure that these people are using, because it does not resolve the problem with that court system. It creates an impasse, or it creates a standoff instead of a set-off, and so the court's going to go, do we really want to standing off, do we want to push it, and do we want to punish this guy until he comes to his senses and will come into this court in the proper form to resolve this issue, and it's going to be up to them and a toss of the dice as to whether they think you're that important or not. That's my point. Now, this guy here, he wasn't standing on unalienable rights or the form of the style of court. He wasn't saying, hey, man, I need Article 3, I need an Article 3 judge, I need presumption of innocence. He was going in there trying to argue the substance of what he had done in order to show the court what a good guy he is and that they ought to send him out the back door with a pat on the back. So that guy was using substance, hoping the court would hear the substance and grant him a win because he was telling them exactly what he was doing, why he was doing it, how it should work. The guy you're talking about wasn't interested in the merits of what was going on and the substance of the merits. He was telling the court the manner in which they are going to act in terms of a form or the form of procedure. meeting, and if we can agree on the rules of procedure, and it acknowledges my unalienable rights protected by the Constitution and your limitations, then I'll agree to disagree with you and we'll go on. And so one set of people are trying to change the form of the public tribunals. There's another group of people out here trying to bring substantive argument in there, believing that the court is going to prevail in terms of a win based on the intelligence of the substance of your defense. And I'm saying both of those fail in that court because that's not the way that court is set up and designed.
Somehow, though, I want to correct you on a point. There have actually been some direct wins using the constitutional method.
What do you define as a win? When the guy goes home and they don't talk about the merits of the case, is that your win?
That is a win, but that's not what I'm talking about. Those are sort of extended wins. No, I'm talking about 300 gaveled out favorite defendants to go home. There have been 300 of those, 300 plus of those, and 600 other cases. Well,
okay.
So anyway, just as there's some notice that there has been some ground gain in that area. You know, we had an interesting suggestion after the fact. This Hugh Shaw down in Fall River, Massachusetts. The thought came now that we know that that is a technique that they may well employ. Perhaps there would be some wisdom in getting a forensic psychiatrist to certify prior to going into court that you are, in fact, totally sane and capable of arguing the case or presenting the case or appearing in court or speaking in court, however you want to put it, so that would essentially disarm that approach. Absolutely.
Well, hang on. What you're telling, and see, what I said to you is they call you, let's use the street vernacular, they call you crazy insane. And you're suggesting to me that it's because they think you're a lunatic crazy, and if you went out and got your own forensic psychiatrist and you said to him, do you think I'm crazy? And the guy's going to go, well, let's walk around, talk around, do some things, take some tests. No, you're not crazy. But then you go into court, and you don't follow the procedures they're expecting you to follow in the court, i.e. you're not colorable in your pleading. You are trying to get the court to change its form of operation, which it cannot do because it's established by an act of Congress, it cannot be changed. Or you come there seeking an argument in substance that they're going to resolve, and they have no capacity to judge you under Article 3, so they can't resolve that either. Are you telling me the judge still isn't going to tell you you're crazy?
I'm telling you that we know the emperor has no clothes, and
they all know that. That's not the problem.
And
how do you deal with an emperor that doesn't have clothes?
And they know that the emperor has no clothes.
They know that. That's true.
Okay, so now if they attempt to override this other doctor in open court, they're simply exposing that the emperor has no clothes.
No, they'll just bring their own doctor in, which says, I think he's crazy. Now we got to dispute as to fact which way you think the judge is going to rule.
I hear what you're saying, and I cannot say that it may never go down that way, but I honestly believe standing there armed with a certified forensic psychiatrist report from you from yesterday, they would not be able to go ahead and pull that stunt.
You're assuming that the court's definition of crazy is the definition your psychiatrist used to adjudicate you with, and I'm telling you there's two different standards.
I'm telling you, you and I know that, but again, if they played that, they would be letting everyone know that the emperor has no clothes.
No, because the judge will just say, well, the prosecutor's giving him this one, or I'm going to have him test him, and that guy's going to come in, and he's going to know the game, and he's going to say, I think he's crazy. So then they're right back at the spot, because that's what happened to the guy in Florida. See, they sent him out for 6 months. And when they sent him out for 6 months and sent him back, what did the forensic psychiatrist for the government say? They said he's crazy, so we can't hold a court proceeding. Now, what's the real reason why they can't hold a trial? What is the real reason?
Tell me.
He's already paid the bill. He paid the bill of exchange. It's done. trial when he settled the case.
So where does this one end up, Jack?
Well, they've got to have a colorable conclusion.
All right, propose some possible scenarios. We've got 3 minutes.
A colorable conclusion, very simple. A guy was detained for over 6 months. He's in house arrest right now. They could literally go back into court, and if this guy doesn't totally screw it up, mess it up, and go in and tell off the prosecutor and the judge again and get into more contempt, the court may back down and say, this guy is hopelessly crazy. There's no sense going on. He's already been institutionalized for 6 months. We are going to sentence him in a finding of guilty to time served in the mental institution. We're going to put him on probation for 3 years. We're going to make sure he files his tax returns and everything else. And for good behavior, he's out. Now,
are you calling that a win?
I'm saying that's exactly what the government could do. Would that look like a win for him?
I wouldn't call it a win.
Well, I would, because like I explained to this guy, the reason you were in the mental institution is because you screwed up. I said they're bending over backwards to try to assist you, but you keep screwing up all the time. Let me give you an example of this screw-up, okay? We're getting close to a break, but what we're going to want to do in the next quarter hour here is his troubles aren't done, because he calls me back and he says, well, irregardless of the criminal case, he says, I've got a pending civil lawsuit where I used the bill in exchange too. Well, let me tell you what I'm going to do. And as soon as he told me, I said, what the hell's wrong with you? You want to lose your house and go back in jail again? Haven't you learned anything?
Well, we've got one more minute till the break. Go ahead. I'll let you finish this up here.
Okay. What this guy said to me is he said, I paid off some kind of a debt. I don't know what it was, but it was to a bank. Could have been a credit card. Could have been house mortgage. Could have been a bunch of different things. So he said, while I was away for 6 months, he says it comes back and they were writing some letters. And he says, now I've looked at the letters and it looks like the bank turned this matter over to some bill collector. And the bill collector wrote me some letters, and now the bill collector wrote me and told me that he's going to file a case, a civil case, in the court for fraud for collection of the debt.
All right, Jack. Declaring our good brothers in Spain, or at least checking them out to see if they are, because they don't want to play by the rules. I have a problem with it, but go ahead.
Okay, let's put the groundwork for what's going on in their court first, before we go on, so everybody understands exactly what's going on and why these processes are not assisting that court in solving the problem so that you can go home. First of all, everybody thinks the courts are courts. They're not. They're appellate proceedings. And so when you're called in for a traffic case, when you're called in for a civil case, when you're called in for a criminal case, it's appellate proceedings. That's all it is. You're already in appeal. Now, would anybody that's been involved in litigation go to appellate court and start yelling to the judges that you got to change the way you're doing your business up here in appeals or I'm not going to come here? For instance, what happens if you're on appeal? The reason you're on appeal is you've already lost something. So if you go to the appellate court, give them a bunch of crap and don't allow them to hear your appeal, is that giving you an advantage or giving you a disadvantage?
Well, I'm following you. I don't know that I agree with the logic here, but I'll let you continue to make the case.
Okay, everything they're doing is on appeal. Just go back to Scripture and it says, by the time you get to the magistrate, if you haven't settled that, you're going to prison. Is that what's happened? Or mental institution?
I can't just say yes, but I know you want me to, but I'm just gonna let you keep going here.
Did Scripture say when you go before their court, ask them if they'll please give you Article 3? Is that what Scripture said?
No, it didn't say that.
Why?
Because
they're not Article 3. They're not under your laws. They're foreign to you.
Correct.
They don't have to give you Article 3. It's a foreign tribunal. It's not yours. And you're already on an appeal. An appeal from what? An administrative procedure. So by the time you're in a court on a traffic ticket, a criminal case, right so that they can accommodate you? Or are you going to go to the appellate court and accept the form they've got and operate within the form of the proceeding?
Well, you don't have a lot of choice except to operate in the form of the proceeding.
Then why are you saying, give me my constitutional rights? There are no constitutional rights in the appellate court. Now, I'm not saying that the people that are doing that may not necessarily get some kind of a, okay, get the hell out of here type approach, but they haven't really settled the background issue, which is an open, an account to which that tribunal is trying to help settle an account. And if you just go home, the account isn't getting settled, it's put to spend in a commercial sense. Now, you could call that a win because they're not calling you in, but who's to say it's not on the record and 3 years down the road, you go before another one of these foreign magistrates and they say, well, we've seen that there's a pattern here of about 75 unsettled accounts. What happens when they really want to get nasty about it then? They're not settled. They're not closed. My point is, you might be able to escape the responsibility of trying to help that foreign government settle an account by use of some kind of intimidating process that embarrasses the hell out of them that they don't want to move forward with, but it doesn't settle the account. It's still there. You call it a win because you went home. But you didn't help anybody. Less of all, you didn't help yourself because there's something out there still hovering over you. You think the accountants are ever going to bury it and it's going to go away?
So you
think it's going to stay on their books indefinitely?
You think it's all about settling an account?
That's all it is. How many counts do they give you in criminal? Every count in criminal is about an A count, which isn't settled. It's a commercial A count. You got 15 counts of felonies, there's 15 A counts that have charges in them that are unsettled. And it's going to stay on the books until you and they have an agreement. Now, you could get excused and go home, but the counts or A counts are not going to go away. Just like with the Savior, there is an A count. Every sin creates a debt in that A count. You can ignore it. You can say, well, Lord, I'm not going to come and I'm not going to negotiate with you. And you're not negotiating on my terms, so through you. But the result is that A count is not settled. Sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite you. Responsible people settle things and close them. Irresponsible people find a reason to walk away from something that needs to be negotiated and settled. That's my point. Now, the problem is the people going into these courts and forums are saying, well, I'll come in and talk with you if you talk on my terms. But if you don't talk on my terms, I won't negotiate with you. Does that settle the account in their system? Even if they say, well, we're not going to accept your terms, but get the hell out of here. The account's still there, and it's piling up. My point, you didn't solve it, you avoided it. It's a procedure of avoidance techniques. And the avoidance techniques are based upon the presumption and assumption that they should operate under the law of the land, Article 3, that if they don't do that, then I'm not going to play your game. But the account is not in Article 3. If the account was in Article 3, law of the land, it would be denominated in gold and silver dollars, and it is not. So the problem is not in the land of reality that you're trying to get them into, and you're saying, I'm not going to go into the land of the fiction. Okay, but the fiction's here, and the fiction will interface you, and if you mess with that world of fiction too often, it's going to punish you.
Well, I have to say that you have done a good job getting people to go to peace. And there is merit to that instead of fighting all the way. And yet, I see such a corrupt fraud that it almost seems to me irresponsible to allow that to continue.
It's a corrupt thought because it's a mirror image of the way the people act. In other words, you're in Disneyland. What reality do you want Disneyland to hold? Everybody goes to Disneyland to avoid any vague reality. They don't want Disneyland to change. And the problem is the public's operating today as though it was a Disneyland. And it's a test here for the people to see if the people are living in reality or living in fiction. And it's trapping most everybody because they're operating in a form of a fiction. They're operating in a fiction to the extent that they don't want to coexist with Disneyland next door. But the problem is, we know that the field, which is the world, has both the wheat harvest and it has also the thistles at the same time. The thistles is Disneyland. And the wheat harvest are God's people. And there's been absolutely no order for the wheat to attack the thistle at this time. It's not our job. And yet that's what most of the patriots are doing. They're going into the thistle court attacking the thistle God under the ground that you're not wheat. Well, I agree. They're not wheat. They'll agree they're not wheat. So what? Where did the wheat have the authority to attack the thorn at this time? Now, the problem with the guy I'm talking about with is he's going in there, and he's naive enough to believe that if he tells reality and truth in there, that that system is going to listen to him, going to see the logic of the reality, appreciate it so much they're going to pat him on the back and tell him to go home. But you remember what the prosecutor said to the judge, the paraphrase, the prosecutor said, this man brings too much reality in here. If we honor his reality, everybody will know what he says is true. And then they won't believe our lies anymore, and we can't con them. So we can't let him get away with it. Which translates into what? We got to punish this guy to keep everybody else from learning the truth. Why did they punish the Messiah? He was a good guy.
Because they were corrupt.
Because they did not want everybody to follow him and learn the truth. Because if they did, what would happen to the scribes and Pharisees and priests? They would lose all of their customers. All the people would desert them and follow the Messiah. So we have to punish the truth. You think the judicial system and the judicial people are any different today than they were back then?
No, they're still corrupt.
You call it corrupt. What I'm saying is, why didn't the Messiah change it? Did he know what was going on, or was he ignorant?
He knew what was going on.
Why didn't he change it?
Okay, Jack, what's the answer to the question?
Okay, since we know their court systems are appellate proceedings, the one group is trying to change the rules by which the appellate court operates. In other words, do it under my unalienable right. And you don't tell an appellate court how it's going to act in the appellate proceedings. The appellate proceedings have followed from previous proceedings, and the appellate proceedings are linked to the same form that the original proceedings operated in. And since you didn't challenge the original proceedings, then you can't challenge the form of the appellate proceedings. Now, the second group of people are trying to go in and argue the reality and the truth of what they did in these court systems as though the court's going to listen to them and grant them some kind of righteous decision based on justice. And they're finding out, gee, that isn't happening either. Why is that not happening? Because there's one very simple rule of procedure when it comes to appellate proceedings. You cannot introduce new evidence into an appellate proceedings that was not already introduced in the original proceeding. So by the time you go to court and you're trying to introduce an argument in that court as to why you did what you did and why you're the good guy, since it's an appellate court, the lowest court that you can think of is already your first appeal. It's an appellate court. and the appellate court cannot hear any new introduction of evidence or facts. So they have to reject everything that you're saying and doing, even if they give you 6 months to put on a dog and pony show and make it look like they're giving you an opportunity to do what they can't hear. Then they come out and rule against you because the case was already established. The facts and the law of the case were already established before it hit the judicial proceedings. Therefore, everything you're doing is a nullity and you get no remedy. This guy said to me, I'm going to be sued civilly. He says, I have to know how to prepare my responsive pleadings so I can go in and argue that these bills of exchange are valid. I said, excuse me? I said, is that the same procedure you used in the criminal process that landed you in 6 months of mental institution? That you're going to go into court and explain to the judge what's going on? I said, you're going down the tubes, dude. I said, if you want to do that civilly, go ahead. But I said, I can tell you right now you're going to lose, and when you do lose, you come back and ask me what went on, and then if you're open to listening to what I'm going to say, fine. Otherwise, you better listen now, and you better not put in a responsive pleading in that nature unless you want to lose again. The court can't hear your argument. You're on appeal. So the guy said to me, well, what do I do? I said, your arguments have got to be administratively with your opponent before you go to court. You've got to get an agreement of the parties. You've got to get evidence of that agreement. You've got to certify it out of a public record. And by the time it goes into an appellate court, if that's where it is, you're going to submit a record to the appellate court for ministerial review, but you're not going to put in pleadings that authorize this court for any kind of judicial proceedings under public policy. There's a heck of a difference when you allow those courts to act ministerially versus judicially. And all these patriots are going in trying to set a judicial proceeding. What the heck do you care what the rules of that court is judicially? If you're not in there judicially, if you're in there ministerially. And that's what these patriots don't understand. They've got to get their administrative record certified properly and allow those public institutions of appeal to look at a ministerial record for review instead of empowering them judicially under some kind of crazy rules of form or substance which they can't pay any attention to. The patriots don't understand what they're up against.
So what's the best way to proceed, Jack?
Well, the best way to proceed is to resolve the problem administratively with your opponent before you do anything within those courts. This guy said to me, well, if I get served a summons for this civil procedure, what am I going to do? And I said, well, if it was me, I would return it with a special appearance motion for time so that I can resolve this matter ministerially or administratively before I enter a pleading. And the court would have to grant that to you because the courts realize that they're on an appellate proceeding. And if they don't give you the opportunity to create your appellate record, they're denying you substantive due process of law. And that's where your protection under the Constitution comes in without ever going into that court and embarrassing the judge and telling him he's got to give it to you.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you're saying that because Sam has said that, Winston has said that, you've always said that they would never walk into court without the matter settled ahead of time.
Absolutely. And to whatever extent anybody's winning, or truly winning in that court, they're going into that court with an already settled record. And that court will give you a win every time if you do it right. They're on your side. Just play by the game. Look, that's a foreign tribunal, right? If it's foreign to you, stop trying to force a square peg into a round hole and make them comply with the original Constitution. They're under international law. It involves treaties. And your administrative record is a treaty that you're bringing before that tribunal for ministerial review. But if you haven't already done that, you're asking that court to hold a public hearing under public policy, and they'll never recognize anything you did in private.
There's no question that the best remedy is in private.
Absolutely. It's the only remedy, and then take it to the public tribunal for ratification as a ministerial act. Ministerially, they have nothing to judge. It's going to be your record, which is going to be impressive because it follows the rules of procedure, the rules of evidence, and there's going to be the public record that you're being charged with, your straw man's being charged with, and the public record is unsupported accusation and fails miserably for evidence under the rules of procedure and rules of evidence. So you're just asking the judge in a ministerial capacity, which one of these two records is this court going to adopt? The one that I submitted according to the rules, or the one that's been submitted by so-called public servants, which means nothing and follows no procedures?
We've got 3 minutes left, a little less than 3 minutes. Why don't you wrap us up here for today?
Okay. You know, I have nothing against people that are trying to learn what the law was, is, or should be if we were all doing everything right. But everybody thinks that that so-called court system is, quote, our system. That is the Disneyland system of justice. And the only way the Disneyland system of justice can prevail in a real world is to allow the real people who do things correctly to colorably come in there and get a remedy by having done everything right. And doing it right means having a ministerial administrative procedure under the rules of evidence and the rules of procedure certified out of public record system so it meets the obligation of avoiding the evidence rule that hearsay is not admissible. If it's certified out of a public record, it's an exception to the hearsay rule, and the court will accept it every day. Because if it's in the public record, your opponent has the ability to go there and establish his own record under the rules of evidence by affidavit, by penalty of perjury, by first-hand testimony that is a counterclaim or a set off your claim, and they'll never do it if you do it right because they know you know what you're doing. But if you try to jam it in their face in the Disneyland court will protect itself by causing you all kinds of pain and harm. And it's only protecting itself.